Welcome to Module 5. In this module, I want to talk to you about how you can build healthy habits when your child's using the iPad. We know that there are some potential health and developmental risks if children aren't using iPads in correct ways or if they're using them for excessive amounts of time. So we need to ensure that we build really healthy habits from the outset that won't compromise our children's health and well-being. So in this particular module, I'm going to talk to you about how we can use iPads to improve and support children's sleep, their vision, their hearing, their posture, potential risks with Wi-Fi exposure, and also their attention spans. I'm going to tell you what some of the potential pitfalls are if we don't use devices in healthy and helpful ways, and then arm you with practical strategies to minimize any of these risks. It's important to say from the outset that we don't yet know what the long-term impact is of these devices on children's health and well-being. We are, in some regards, conducting a bit of a living experiment, so we need to err on the side of caution. We need to know about what children need, what their basic unchanging developmental needs are, and then consider how technology might be impinging on this. We need to also tell children and teach them healthy habits because as to whether we love it or loathe it, the technology is here to stay. So we have to find healthy and helpful ways to use it so that children form healthy habits from the outset. So let's start by looking at sleep. Sleep is absolutely essential. I'm preaching to the converted when I tell parents that children need sleep for optimal learning and development. But we know that children's quality and quantity of sleep can actually be impeded by the use of iPads and other tablet and mobile devices. We know that backlit devices like the iPad can actually cause delays in the onset of sleep. You see, when we're using a backlit device, it often is emitting blue light, and blue light inhibits our body's production of melatonin, and melatonin is what our body needs to fall asleep quickly and easily. This inhibited production of melatonin can actually result in sleep delays, so it takes our little ones a little bit longer to fall asleep, and over time, these sleep delays can accumulate into quite a significant sleep deficit. So for example, let's consider if your child's using the iPad before bed, it may take them 10 minutes each night to fall asleep, 10 extra minutes to fall asleep. Over the course of a week, that's a 70-minute lack of sleep. And over time, this accumulates. Now, sleep is vital for optimal brain function. When children sleep, their brain does two important things. It consolidates any neural pathway, so any new information that needs to be stored and retrieved, it goes through this consolidation process, and it also prunes. It gets rid of any neural connections that aren't required. So if children aren't getting adequate amounts of sleep, this can obviously directly affect how they learn, and we've all survived the toddler tantrums. We know that a lack of sleep and tired children often have behavioral issues as well. So we need to make sure that children's iPad use isn't impinging on their sleep. So what do we need to do? Some practical strategies to ensure that your child's iPad use isn't impinging on their screen use. One is to have what Jocelyn Brewer, Australian psychologist Jocelyn Brewer, calls it a digital sunset. Having a specific time, I like to consider it a digital bedtime, a time of the day when devices aren't used. And the research at this stage is telling us that 90 minutes is really the ideal amount of time before a child goes to sleep where they should not be using digital devices, particularly backlit devices like mobiles. So we need to have a digital sunset, a time when devices are switched off. To facilitate this and make it much easier for parents to manage the multitude of devices that often live in homes, parents can specify a landing zone. It might be the kitchen countertop. It might be the sideboard in the dining room. It might be the desk in the study. But a specific physical location in your house where devices go at a set time to be charged. That means it's so much easier as a parent to go past at night and do a quick head count and check that you've got the 8 iPads, the 3 iPhones, and the 6 laptops there ready to be charged for the next day. So having a landing zone works well. Now, sometimes I'm aware with children's co-curricular commitments that sometimes that 90-minute curfew isn't always easy to enforce. So if your child is going to use an iPad before bed in that 90-minute period, a couple of things you can do. One is to dim the brightness on the device. You can actually go into the device's settings and you can physically dim how bright the display is. Obviously, the more brighter the display is set at, the more blue light that's being emitted, and hence the body's inability to produce melatonin, which they need to promote the onset of sleep. Another thing that we can do is to increase the distance between our child and the device. Children that are using devices in close proximity to their physical body are obviously absorbing a lot more blue light, and again, this is inhibiting their production of melatonin. So increase the distance between your child and the device. Sometimes doing a technology switch. This is why before bedtime, we often need to encourage children to perhaps watch a television as opposed to using the iPad. The other thing that we can do is, if children are going to use an iPad in that 90 minutes before bed, besides dimming the brightness, is to think very carefully about what content they're using. Is it highly engaging and interactive, or is it a more passive activity? We have what we call the arousal effect. So when children are using more interactive and stimulating activities on the iPads, this can obviously arouse the brain and again delay the onset of sleep. So really, really important, again, to reiterate that we have a digital curfew, a time when devices are switched off, have a landing zone. Ideally, that curfew would be 90 minutes before bed or nap time as well. But if that's not possible, putting in some other preventative measures, so dimming the brightness, increasing the distance or between the child and the device, and even looking for technology swaps. Now, in one of the current iOS updates, one of the latest iOS updates, there's an option for night shift mode, and it will actually work by shifting your iPhone or iPad's display from a blue tint to a much softer yellow tint. And you can either have this set up so that it's on demand or automatically at sunrise and sunset, or even using a custom user set schedule. It's turned on in the settings app, and you can either manually enable the functions, or you can have it automatically adjust, and it will actually adjust to wherever you are located if you've got your GPS settings turned on. So if you travel, it will make those necessary adjustments. Now again, we want to promote healthy lifelong habits, so we want our children to be able to switch off devices and start to understand that these types of devices can also impact on their sleep. Another really important way in which screens, particularly iPads, can impact on children's sleep is not only with the onset of sleep, but it's also disrupting children's sleep cycles. Bedrooms really need to be tech-free zones. Children should not have tablets in their bedrooms. What can happen is that children can wake up naturally, as they often do, to go to the bathroom, or if they've had a bad dream, and if the device is present in their room, they can see notifications or they may be interested in looking at it. This can again cause the arousal effect and make it much more difficult for children to resume their sleep. But we're also seeing hearing increasing reports of children's sleep cycles being disrupted by the presence of tablets in bedrooms. We know, for example, that children are using or they're having access to tablets in their bedroom, iPads and other smartphones in their bedroom. And what's happening again, they often naturally wake up to go to the bathroom, but if there's an alert or a notification on their phone, they're often drawn into having a look at it. Somebody may have crafted something in Minecraft. There might be an update to the latest software or the latest app on the device. All of these notifications can attract children's attention. And what we know is that if they are woken up, children or all of us go through 5 stages of sleep each night. And if we're woken up between any of those stages, when we go back to sleep, we actually go back to stage 1. So if, for example, a child is woken up because of a notification on their iPad between stages 2 and 3, when they resume or want to go back to sleep, they don't start between stages 2 and 3. They go all the way back to stage 1 and start again. So what we're seeing is that children's sleep cycles, their patterns, are being disrupted by the use of technology. So really, really important that bedrooms are tech-free zones. I now want to talk to you about the impact of iPads on children's vision and their eye health. We're hearing increasing reports of ophthalmologists and optometrists reporting that young children are presenting with increasing rates of myopia, which is nearsightedness. And screens and the use of tablet devices are one way in which, or one reason, that specialists are explaining why we're seeing this rapid increase. Now, again, this isn't yet substantiated by a rigorous body of scientific evidence. This is more based on anecdotal reports, but medical practitioners are reporting a steady increase in young children's eye health issues. So what can we do? Banning the iPad is not necessarily a solution. Again, we want to teach healthy habits from the outset. So some practical things that we can do with our children when they're using the iPad. First and foremost is to always make sure that the iPad is being used in an environment where the lighting is similar to the natural environment. So we want to avoid using iPads under bright fluorescent lighting or out in direct sunlight. If we can, using the devices out of these glary areas, because it places additional strain on the eyes. We also need to make sure we encourage our children to blink a lot more when they're using these. We blink about 66% less when we're using a screen than in our natural state. So we need to make sure that children are lubricating their eyes by blinking more when they're using a screen. But the most important strategy that we can implement when it comes to healthy vision is encouraging children to take a break. A simple strategy that I recommend, as well as ophthalmologists, is the 20-20-20-20 rule. And that is that every 20 minutes your child uses a screen, especially an iPad or a mobile device, they take at least a 20-second break, and they look at something 20 feet away, which is about 6 meters, and they do something physically active, star jumps, push-ups, for at least 20 seconds. This break gives the eye time to recalibrate. It helps to develop that depth of vision that children do not get if they're constantly looking at things too close. We also need, and I guess this is the simplest solution to this and comes back to one of my core messages, we have to balance kids' time online and offline. They need time in nature. Nature and unstructured play opportunities provide the natural context for children to develop healthy vision. So we need to make sure that we're balancing their screen time and their green time. To recap, some of the simple vision strategies that I recommend is in encouraging children to use the device in natural light. It's taking regular 20-20-20-20 breaks. It's blinking a lot more, and it's going back to traditional play. There are some other functions that we can change within our iPad as well. We also want to make sure that the brightness of the screen is not competing with the natural environment. So we can actually go in and manually alter the brightness of the screen so it will become responsive based, we can determine how bright we want it according to our needs, our physical needs. But we can also turn on auto brightness, and it will start to regulate the brightness of the screen according to our physical environment. So there are some simple strategies there. The World Health Organization estimates that 1.1 billion people worldwide could be affected by noise-induced hearing loss because of unsafe use of personal music devices like MP3 and smartphone headphones, as well as because of exposure to noisy entertainment venues. That's 1.1 billion people. This poses a real risk to young children who are, first of all, using headphones for increasing amounts of time, and secondly, being introduced to headphones at much younger and younger ages. We don't yet know the long-term impact on children's hearing if they're constantly plugged into headphones. So this is why I promote a precautionary approach with using headphones. So what can we do again besides banning or completely avoiding headphones? There are some simple things that we can put in place to minimize potential risks to noise-induced hearing loss. It may come as a surprise to learn that many commercial headphones and MP3 players, including the iPad and iPhone, can actually reach 130 decibels. Now, safe decibel levels are considered somewhere in the vicinity of 65 to 75 decibels. So this means that we are possibly exposing children to double the amount of decibel levels that are considered healthy and safe. So what can we do? Some simple strategies. first and foremost, limiting our children's time with headphones. Because we don't yet know the long-term or the accumulative effect of using headphones, we should really limit children's headphone use to 1 hour a day. We should also encourage the use of earmuff-style headphones as opposed to earbud-style headphones. Earmuff headphones have the advantage of blocking out some of the superfluous background noise, making it much easier for our children to actually concentrate on the volume and the noise that they need to be listening. They no longer have to crank up the volume to be able to hear over the top of some of the background noise. Now, your child will probably tell you they need the very fancy and expensive earmuff style headphones. It's not the case. Simple earmuff headphones from a lot of toy shops and general stores like Kmart in Australia and Target and Officeworks in Australia as well can work brilliantly. The other thing that we need to do with children's hearing is to set maximum levels on devices. Now, there are not many devices currently available on the commercial market where you can specify decibel levels. However, if you to go into your iPad or iPhone's settings and you go to music, you can actually specify the volume limit. So you can determine exactly how loud, and again, not with decibel levels, but you can set a maximum level on a sliding scale, and you can greatly limit how loud your child can turn the device up. So this means they can press that plus button on the iPad until their finger turns blue, but it won't actually get to really loud levels. So again, we need to remind ourselves that there are potential risks to hearing loss if children are using headphones inappropriately or for excessive amounts of time. Reminder what we can do: limit headphone use to 1 hour a day, use earmuff style headphones, and set limits. Teach children using that volume limit control in your settings. Teach them about what safe headphone volumes are as well. The next digital health issue that we need to address are concerns regarding children's musculoskeletal problems. We're hearing increasing reports again from physiotherapists and from chiropractors who report treating increasing numbers of children with musculoskeletal problems because of inappropriate or excessive amounts of screen time. So what can we do? First and foremost, we need to teach children healthy posture when using devices. And it doesn't matter if it's a tablet or a smartphone or even a laptop. The most important thing with a screen is that the device comes to the child's eye level and not the other way around, where the child's body comes to the screen's eye. Sorry, their body comes to the screen's level. So we need to prop up iPads and try and get them at a suitable level. We can use simple things like books or cushions or a lounge chair. We want children's spine to be as straight as possible. ErgoBreakForKids.com have a website and also an app that provides really simple to understand but practical advice about children's ergonomic health. And I'd highly recommend that you have a look at that. We need to really ensure that the iPad's at the child's level. Another alternative posture to this is actually getting children to lie on their stomach. Many children naturally like to look at the iPad on their stomach, and there's a couple of advantages in doing this. One is that they lie on their elbows, and no one likes to lie on their elbows for long periods of time. So when they lie in this position, they're more likely to get up and readjust their body and recalibrate their body as well. So they're not going to spend excessive amounts of time lying in one position. Another advantage of them lying on their stomach using the iPad is that it keeps their neck in a neutral position. Their eyes are hovering over the device. Their neck isn't flexed or hunched over to be able to see the screen. So we need to talk about healthy posture. We also need to make sure, again, it comes back to this idea, we need to balance their time on screens with their time in the green. They need physical activity. We need to make sure kids are taking regular breaks. Again, why that 20-20-20-20 strategy works well, but just making sure that we balance our kids' time with a device with their time without a device. We have to make sure that screen time isn't eroding children's opportunity for physical movement and activity. Now, the next possible health issue I want to talk about is a very contentious one. There is still a lot of scientific uncertainty, but it's something I think that's really important that I at least address as something that we consider, that it's a possible red flag, and that is electromagnetic radiation that comes from our devices. Children are increasingly using these devices at younger and younger ages, and often for increased amounts of time. And we don't yet have clear scientific evidence to prove that exposure to electromagnetic radiation that comes out of our device, our Wi-Fi router, our cordless telephone, our baby monitor, we don't yet have the evidence to prove that this exposure to electromagnetic radiation is actually safe. We also don't have conclusive evidence at this stage to prove that it is harmful, but it's a relatively new technology. We don't yet have the longitudinal evidence to show us, particularly with humans, that these are safe technologies. In 2011, the World Health Organization classed electromagnetic radiation as a type 2B possible carcinogen. Not many people are aware of this. In Australia, our governing body that looks at this scientific evidence, called APANSA, have actually suggested that we adopt the precautionary principle when it comes to young children and their exposure to electromagnetic radiation. Now, I will be completely honest and say I used to think people that worried about Wi-Fi were mad scientists. I thought there was nothing to worry about. We seem to have this acceptance that just because it's everywhere, that it must be safe, it must be all right. My biggest fear after attending some conferences and reading some of the research myself is that electromagnetic radiation could potentially be the asbestos or the tobacco of the 21st century. We don't yet know what the long-term implications are, especially for young children. Young children have thinner skulls. They have more water volume in their brains, meaning that they're much more susceptible to possible environmental risks. My friends call me Cautious Christie, and I hope this is me just being Cautious Christie, but I recommend that families and schools implement APANSA's guidelines, and that is to adopt the precautionary principle around children. Minimize their exposure. So what can we do apart from moving to the country and disconnecting all the devices? Simple things. Teach your child no apps in laps. Do not put the device that has five antennae in their lap so that it can emit electromagnetic radiation. Always increase the distance between the child and the device. Exactly the same thing when your child's making a phone call, put it on loudspeaker. Discourage them from putting it up to their head. Particularly avoid using mobile phones in weak signal areas when we do the mobile dance to try and pick up a signal. Send a text message or just avoid using it. Switching iPads and iPhones, to airplane mode before use. There are very few apps that require internet connectivity, and if they do, this isn't an option. But if internet connectivity isn't required, switch it to airplane mode. It's greatly reducing your child's exposure. Where possible, plugging back in, finding the blue Ethernet cable that we all threw out when we got Wi-Fi, and plugging computers and other technologies that do have a hardwire option back in, as opposed to always using Wi-Fi. And another simple strategy is turning Wi-Fi routers off when not in use. Now, I really want to reiterate, because I don't want to cause unease or unnecessary angst, we don't yet have any conclusive evidence to show us completely that electromagnetic radiation is harmful for humans. But we have enough evidence for the World Health Organization and for our Australian governing body to recommend that we at least adopt the precautionary principle when it comes to children. I hope I'm just being cautious, Christie, but I think it's important that we take some preventative measures and again to teach our children these healthy habits, because they're going to be exposed to this technology throughout their lives. The next digital health issue that I want to address is changes in children's attention spans. There are increasing concerns that children and adults, we know it ourselves, We're checking our phones 150 times a day. We're consuming about 174 newspapers worth of data every single day. So our attention span is fleeting. We find it hard to ignore the text message that flashes on our phone if we're at a cafe or in a meeting. So we have this continual state where our attention is fractured or it's partially there. So really important that we teach children how to do one thing at a time. So I hate to say it, but ladies, men were right. We've got it wrong. We cannot multitask. Our brain is incapable of doing more than one thing at a time. So really important that we teach children how to do just one thing. Discourage them from using the iPad whilst watching the TV and listening to music. This causes huge biological changes in the brain. When we try and multitask, we aren't actually doing two things at once, even though we think we are. We're doing something called continual partial attention. We're task switching very quickly, but we're fleeting our attention between multiple tasks. And this has huge cognitive costs. We burn through glucose when we do this. So we feel really tired and fatigued when we're trying to multitask. It also releases increased amounts of cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So we tend to feel more panicked and stressed when we're trying to do multiple things. So one of the best things that we can teach our young children with any technology, but particularly with the iPad, it's so easy for me to become disinterested in an app or a website or a television show. I can touch the home button and go to something else. Or I can be using the iPad and simultaneously be watching the TV. We have to teach children to put a fortress around their focus. They need to monotask, not multitask. And I, in fact, think this is one of the best gifts we can give our children. If our children do not know how to manage their attention, and remember, they're not expected to. The part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is that CEO, air traffic control system of the brain, doesn't come online till their early 20s for females and late 20s for males. We're expecting them to have impulse control in a world that's constantly providing sensory stimulation. The digital world is like a sensory smorgasbord. There's always something new to look at or listen to, or a flash or an animation. And this has huge costs for our attention. So we need to teach children the art of monotasking, not multitasking. And one of the simplest ways we can do this is to set up a function on our device called guided access. And guided access is relatively simple to set up, but can have a really profound impact on how your child uses the iPad. It can also prevent one of the common accidents. In module 3, I told you the story of my friend whose daughter was watching the Play School app, and in between mum leaving her to do this and having a shower, her daughter had jumped out of the Play School app. She'd become disinterested in that and had launched the FaceTime app to be having a conversation with one of Dad's work colleagues. We can actually prevent this. We can, for want of a better word, lock children into an app so that they can only use one app at a time. Now, this might sound quite drastic, but it's really teaching children how to harness their attention, how to put a fortress around their focus. And I'm going to show you how to do this now. I'm now going to show you how to set up guided access on your device. This has the advantage of keeping children locked within one app. This provides obvious safety mechanisms for you. They can't go jumping in and out of various apps if you're not able to sit down and co-view. And it also has the added benefit of teaching our children the art of monotasking, just doing one thing, seeing it through to completion, and then starting something different. In this digital age where attention spans are fleeting, it's so easy to jump in and out of lots of different apps. So this is an important lifelong skill that we'll teach our children. So what I want to share with you now is how to go about setting up guided access on your device. So to activate guided access, I only need to go through this process I'm about to show you once, and then it's set up for the device. So if I go into settings and I go into general and into accessibility, If I scroll down, I can actually go into where it says guided access underneath learning, and I want to make sure guided access is turned on. So this green button up here needs to be turned on. I also need to set a passcode. Again, write this down, commit it to memory, get it tattooed, but whatever you do, don't tell your child. There's also the option, if you do tend to forget your password, where you can use the Touch ID, but remember that would mean you need to be physically present every time you wanted to end it. There's also the scope, and we'll look at this further in Module 6, about how you can set time limits as well. So within Guided Access, you can specify a time limit that the child can have, and it can also play a sound and have a remaining time that's left, give the children an alert or a notification. And this can really help prevent the onset of a techno tantrum because they're given ample warning that they need to switch the device off soon. So basically, we go into general accessibility and make sure guided access is turned on. We've done that once. That's all we need to do. So now we can open up any app that we would like, and we can activate guided access. So really important, the way that we activate guided access is by three rather fast clicks of the home button, and this begins the process of guided access. So let's start it. So you'll see I get the option of pressing start in the top right-hand corner. So now I've activated it and it's asking me for my password. Now I'm trying to touch that home button and I get a message and a notification saying that guided access is enabled. Now the app functions normally, the child can advance throughout the app and use it like they normally would. They just can't touch that home button to jump in and out. So they're literally locked in. Now, really important that you know how to get out of guided access, because there's nothing worse than being locked out of your own device. And it's exactly the same way that we got in. Three clicks to get in and three clicks to get out. So I enter my four-digit password, and in the top left-hand corner, you'll notice the word end. So now I can end guided access and the iPad goes back to functioning normally by the home button becoming activated again. Now, sometimes we also want, again, to teach our children how to focus their attention. So there might be parts of the screen that we don't want them using. If we really just want them, for in this example, just to focus on reading the story, we may not want them touching the home button. In other apps, there might be a jigsaw puzzle button that they always touch instead of doing the maths algorithms that they're supposed to be doing. So we can actually do something in guided access where we can restrict some of the hotspots, the parts of the screen that a child can touch. So with my finger, I just draw a shape and it recognizes that I was trying to draw a circle. I can now drag and drop this circle over the part of the screen where I want to disable that hotspot. So underneath that gray circle, the home button. And I just don't want my children accessing that home button. There might be a buy now button or a find out more or play the game button. The important thing when you're disabling hotspots is that it's the same position on every screen or every slide within the app. We've also got the option of drawing a bit of a wonky rectangle. Let's say I don't want them activating the bookmark option, I can drag that over their spot. So any part of the screen I want to deactivate and not make a hotspot, I can draw a shape and simply drag it over there. Now when I press resume, you can see a very faint grey circle and grey looking rectangle over those parts of the screen that I don't want the child using. So when I tap on them, nothing happens. That hotspot has been disabled. So that is specific to that app. It's not that same spot within every app, but that particular hotspot is disabled throughout the whole app, so I can get rid of it if I don't want to. So again, three clicks to get into guided access and three clicks to get out. Hopefully that has shown you how important and how simple it is to start to teach children really healthy, positive ways about managing their attention spans. Remember, monotask, don't multitask.